I have to admit, I'm from an AI background, so I'm a little more skeptical about some of the claims than maybe other folks are. My COO and my CPO both wish that I was as on the bandwagon as they are. They're really hoping it's going to massively improve productivity, and I'm like, I think it will help, but I'm not sure it will revolutionize in the way that people hope for.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's show, my guest is Mary Williams. She is the CTO of Pleo. But before that, I'm joined by Akish. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Pleo. Pleo's solution simplifies the process of business spending by eliminating expense reports. My God, would I love it if expense reports were eliminated.
Really?
Ah, it's expenses, yeah. Just generally I find difficult. I imagine from a CFO's perspective it's a bloody nightmare, but
yeah.
Just expenses in businesses generally seem to be fairly arcane.
Yeah, that's true. But also I imagine if you're the one processing expenses, that is
That
can't be
dealing with idiots like me, having probably put input stuff wrong and not coded it up correctly, and multiple differences. So I know for a fact that within our org we've got several different systems across different brands.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm that guy where, you know, I think I've done everything right. Gets to when your expenses should be paid, and I think, oh, I haven't been paying my expenses. I wonder what's happened. And then go and log back onto the system and see there's about 15 errors there. So I can't imagine it's a fun job.
No.
And we don't make it easy. So
you know, the CFO might be as interested in our podcast today as anybody else. Very quickly, do you know what a polymath is?
No, I don't.
I had no idea what a polymath is, but Mary, our guest, is a polymath. And it's one of those words where I was like, that sounds quite, it kind of sounds impressive, but I don't really know what it is, so I'm going to have to look it up. Apparently, it's a person with a wide knowledge or learning. Basically, she excelled in a lot of shit at school.
Basically, very clever. Very intelligent. Very clever. Yeah, it's a good way of saying I am, you know, pretty much genius.
Yeah, very good at languages, very good at sciences. I think the fact that we had to look up what polymath means probably indicates that we're not polymaths.
Yeah, exactly that.
Anyway, look, we'll hand over to today's interview, and myself and Akish will be back afterwards. So today I'm joined by Mary Williams, CTO at Pleo. Thank you for giving up some time. How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
Yes,
I
was going to say, I interviewed you a long time ago, when you were at Moo, when this podcast was in its very early tentative steps, and I have to be honest, our interview made an impression. It's one of the ones where I do remember it quite clearly. You gave me some quite helpful feedback on interviewing, which actually guests rarely do, and was very useful. So I thank you for that, and it's a joy to see you again.
Yeah, lovely to see you too.
Let's start with a little bit of introduction, because while some people might be familiar with Pleo, I always take the attitude that this has an audience that is global, and therefore certain brands will not be known to our audience. Who are Pleo? What do you do for them?
Sure. So Pleo is a Danish fintech unicorn, and what we do is spend management, which basically just means we issue corporate cards, and we have a really easy to use app that means that when people need to spend money on behalf of their business, they just spend the money, take a photo of the receipt, and that's it. No more expense reports, nothing else to worry about past that point. We tend to be quite beloved by CFOs and finance teams because we make their life a lot easier, not having to chase people down for receipts all the time. It's a quite beloved brand as well. I didn't expect when I was going to work for a company that largely makes expense management software that people would come up to me and be excited about the fact that I was there. But people are genuinely really big fans of it, so it's lovely to meet customers who love it so much.
I can totally get that. Having in the last couple of years suddenly found myself in a situation of traveling, which I hadn't had before, and having a company credit card, which again I hadn't had before, I find myself with stacks of receipts, and it's an absolute nightmare. So if you can take that headache away, I am not surprised that people love the product.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. We mostly serve small and medium sized businesses, so we tend to be coming in where we're replacing a spreadsheet or a Google Doc or something like that, rather than we're not like Concur or any of the really huge SAP integrated options, but we integrate really well with other finance systems like Xero and Datev and similar.
Yeah, and look, if I'm right, your dad was an engineer and your mum was an accountant, right? So this is almost kind of the perfect company to find yourself in.
Yeah, this and Monzo are the ones they've been the most excited about, for sure, where it made the most sense to them what I did. My dad's a mechanical engineer, my mum's an accountant. So I never found maths very scary, which is a real advantage in this job, I think.
Now, if I'm right, you mentioned about the CFO role, a couple of moments ago, and I saw some stats in one of your reports from 2023, rather, that said that 97% say the role of the CFO has changed within Yes. organizations. So I suppose that might be a good place to start in terms of what consumers are asking for from Pleo and how the role of the CFO changing is actually impacting your business and what customers are looking for.
Yeah, so what the main thing that we're seeing is that finance teams want to be and are increasingly strategic. So they're stopping having this image of just being the bean counters and the ones who chase everybody all the time, and trying instead to play a much more active role in the business. And I think the economic environment changing in the way that it has means that there's not only a welcome. I think they already had a seat at the table, let's be honest, they're CFOs, but an even greater seat at the table for those leaders, and that their teams are increasingly trying to help with cost saving, with value driving, with what's the best way to use the company's money, especially in these latest times where things are a lot more cash strapped as well. So that's the main change that we're seeing, is this more move to more strategic advisory kind of work.
And if you're going to move towards strategy and have some clarity there, then understanding budgets or having a lack of clarity over budgets is going to be a real issue. And if I refer again back to the same report, 44% of UK businesses struggling to set budgets in 2023 due to a lack of clarity over business spend in 2022. Has that changed at all? Because I appreciate I'm quoting figures from about a year and a half ago, but...
I mean, I don't think it's gotten much better, is the sad reality. I think that it's increasingly tough to keep track of everything. One of the things that we've introduced recently at Pleo is something called vendor cards, where you can basically have a card that's just for your AWS account. It's just for your Google Ads. It's just for your your hardware supplier that sends all your laptops over, so that you can make sure that nothing else is being spent on that card, and you can centralize all your spend to that one card and get better visibility of it. Because when everybody's buying laptops separately from the Apple Store, or there's seven different Google Ads accounts or whatever, it gets very, very difficult to see across the whole business. And so that's one of the challenges that we're trying to help people with.
AI is something that we're talking about endlessly in the technology sector at the moment. I noticed on your website, it talked about 138 hours saved in a year by admins, so you can see, or administration rather, being lifted from people's plates. So you can see the impact of AI there. How are you using AI internally, not just in terms of a tool, but also to help your teams as well?
Yeah, so we're finding it to be a really helpful productivity booster. We did a trial over the last 6 months with Google's Copilot, which is obviously a kind of AI assistant for coding. And we're increasingly seeing generative AI being helpful with things like classifying what a vendor is. So you don't have to Google who that is that somebody spent money on. We can just provide that context immediately in the app. We're also using it for internal uses, like helping to get the tone of voice right in customer communications, to make sure that we're really consistent. And we're starting even to experiment using it for translations as well, because obviously we're a very European focused company. We're in a number of European markets and therefore in a number of languages as well.
It's interesting that you mentioned Copilot, and forgive me for inserting some of my own personal experience recently. And I am part of a Copilot trial group within our own organization. And when I was given the kind of the license, I kind of went, well, how do I use this on a podcast? And actually it's been remarkably useful in lots of different ways that I hadn't envisaged. In your own experience, when you're looking at kind of upskilling your own teams, what's their experience been? Have they immediately seen how this is going to help them?
I think there's been a varied reaction to it. I think the risk is that the less experienced folks take it at its word, and you can't just let it fill in the code and trust it. You have to really understand what it's written. And so there's been some of my more senior folks who've been quite worried about it, allowing people to write code without fully understanding it, but that's not different from when people used to, copy paste off Stack Overflow, and maybe they didn't fully understand the solution either. But for the folks who've got who are kind of mid-level and senior, they found it to be quite a good productivity booster. I don't think it's quite as life-changing as some of the early studies were showing, where, you could be 50% faster and that kind of stuff. It's probably more 10-20%. But that's still very useful, right? That's still giving people half a day back a week or a day back a week that they can then be better focused on really deeply understanding the requirements or that kind of stuff. I mean, I think the reality of software is we spend a lot more time understanding what the right thing to build is than we do building anyway. And I don't think that AI is yet helping us that much with that part of it. But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. I have to admit, I'm from an AI background, so I'm a little more skeptical about some of the claims than maybe other folks are. My COO and my CPO both wish that I was as on the bandwagon as they are. They're really hoping it's going to massively improve productivity, and I'm like, I think it will help, but I'm not sure it will revolutionize in the way that people hope for.
It's interesting. I was up in Edinburgh talking to one of the robotics and AI professors at Heriot Watt University recently, and he said that one of the problems you've got is that organizations are perhaps a little bit conservative in their thinking, and therefore you get people coming out of education thinking that it's going to be more transformative than it really is. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. I also think that there's a risk with generative AI in particular, that it sounds like a very erudite person. It sounds like someone very smart. And if it were someone very smart, you could trust that someone with big decisions. And the reality is that it's tech that's good at sounding great and good at summarizing and good at writing, but it's not good at decision making. It's not what it's designed for. But I think it's very easy to go, oh, it sounds so erudite. It sounds like it can handle such complexity. I can trust decision making to it as well. And I think that's where people are falling over a little bit, is that its ability to make choices for you or prioritization for you is not brilliant. It's not really what the tech was designed for. It's not what it's great at. But it's very easy to imagine that it might be. Dr. Joanna Bryson, who I studied under, who's quite a kind of voice in AI ethics these days, she once referred to them as just very sophisticated magic eight balls. that is both a sick burn and remarkably accurate. That is a very good way of thinking about it. So that's the kind of conversation I'm encouraging in my exec team is, yes, okay, but will a really, really clever magic eight ball be the thing that we need for this particular problem? Or do we need a decision tree or a process or something else?
You're someone who described themselves as a polymath.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I had to look up what polymath meant. But you at school, you excelled in a number of different subjects. And I think it's really interesting because with AI and with generative AI needing, I suppose, people to be able to prompt, and interesting that you kind of, the way that you describe AI, it would suggest that we are going to need slightly different people coming into our industry to work with these tools. Do you see that? How do you see that playing out in terms of skill sets?
I think we're going to see technical writers becoming hugely more important. I think they're already very important. It's the, you know, make or break of how good your APIs are, how good your technical product is. It depends a lot on how good your documentation is. And I think we've seen the rise of those technical writer roles over the years anyway. I think knowledge management becomes hugely more important as well. And I think the other change that it's not bringing about this change, but it's highlighting this change, is that the reality is mostly we don't write code starting from a blank screen. We're mostly dealing with code that's already written that we're adjusting or extending or fixing or breaking in many cases. And so I think the reality that it's not about going from nothing to hello world, it's about taking something that's already running and already working and making it better. I think that reality is sinking in for more people now, that it's not always about the starting with a blank page. It's about taking something that exists and working with it. And so I think we're seeing people be a bit more realistic about the fact that mostly you work on software that is a team sport rather than, you know, sitting on your own and developing something from scratch. I think those writing and reading skills are increasingly important. I've talked about before, I was very lucky growing up in South Africa. We don't narrow subjects in the same way that the UK does. So I did six subjects. Well, I actually did eight because I'm an insecure overachiever, but I did a number of subjects right the way to the end of school, and you had to do at least two of the languages of the, we have 11 national languages, you had to study at least two of those, and you and I can't remember if you had to do a science, but I think you might have meant to do a science as well, and so that kind of breadth was encouraged in much more of a way. Whereas my wife, who's an architect, she needed to know at 15 that she should study art, physics and maths, because those are the prerequisites for an architecture degree in many of the UK universities. And that's a weird mix, right? Knowing that you need art and maths and physics is quite a weird thing to know when you're 15. And so I think I benefited a lot from not having to make that choice and to narrow down my subject choices until much later.
Wow, yeah, I don't think I knew what I wanted to do until I was about 30. So, do you, out of interest, do you think that's going to be a net positive or net negative when it comes to a more diverse and inclusive industry, having that appreciation for breadth built in?
I think it's going to be helpful. I think we're already seeing increasing numbers of career changes coming into tech. We're seeing people from who don't have a computer science degree. Like, a computer science degree should not be a prerequisite for a career in tech. And I genuinely don't believe that it is. I've got one, and I can say with certainty that it is not a requirement, much to my university's distress sometimes when I say, well, I need people to come out as good programmers and developers, and they go, but we're producing computer scientists. And I went, yeah, but shouldn't one of those be a superset of the other? We had quite an interesting debate about it. But I think that we're going to see people from much broader backgrounds. I think we're going to see people who've done lots of synthesizing of information and understanding lots of different perspectives and then writing that up into an essay, doing much better in tech than many of us who have a more mathematical education that maybe didn't get any of those skills along the way.
And look, just as a last question, you have been CTO in a number of very successful, influential tech brands, but what questions do you find yourself asking still when you're going out and you're talking to your peers and you're going into the community? What are the questions at the forefront of your mind?
So I'm asking a lot about how people are structuring their teams for stability rather than growth, because I think that's the real difference that we've seen in recent months, years, is this, you know, sudden slowdown in what was hyperscale in a number of businesses, and that's really affecting how teams are set up, what managers are doing, what tech leads are doing. And so I end up having a lot of conversations about team structure and team topologies with folks. Everybody's talking about AI, and you can't escape that. And I think a lot of my peers are in the same situation I'm in, where maybe the aspirations and the reality aren't quite meeting up, but we're at the the difficult crux of that conversation, where we're going to go, yeah, I know we hoped that we could get how many percent productivity, but the data is telling us that it's actually more like this. And so I think that's interesting. And then, you know, perennial, but coming back even stronger now is security. So the rise in cyber attacks, ransomware, all of these kind of things continues to be more and more organized and tougher to fight against, unfortunately.
You're the second person in a C-suite role this morning to have said that to me. So I kind of might need to go back into our data, which I think said that cyber attacks were, or major cyber attacks were on the decline. Maybe we've got that wrong. No, very interesting to talk to you this morning. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for giving up some time, and wonderful to see that your career is obviously doing so well since we last spoke. Not that that was ever in doubt, and hopefully we can catch up again at some point.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to hear that Mary is saying that productivity can be boosted by AI, but it's not a magic solution for software developers, or for software development rather, given that you're, you know, in the business of recruiting engineers for financial institutions. We don't want magic solutions. We just want tools that help them.
Exactly that. I think when we look at it, we need aids to assist and to make things maybe quicker, or maybe, you know, solve problems quicker, rather than the problem solver being AI. Because I think, yeah. I think at the moment, especially in very heavily regulated environments, you can't just rely on AI. And to be fair, even in non-regulated environments, I don't think we are at that level. I mean, we still might be sat here in 10 years' time, you know, saying that, yeah, we're at a point now where AI can completely sort of take over. But I think it's completely different now. And where we are at the moment within industry, I just think it's something where I don't think we're completely ready just to take away, but definitely an addition and a soft touch of AI alongside people's sort of day jobs and, you know, sort of engineering capabilities is only going to boost organizations.
Now, one creature, I'm trying to think of the right way of phrasing this, that might disagree and say AI can take over is a black-legged kittiwake. Do you know what a black-legged kittiwake is? This is like...
No, I mean, you're literally asking me these questions, and I kind of feel like I'm just getting bombarded. I actually feel that I need to go and do some reading after this.
I bet you could guess what a kittiwake is.
A kittiwake, a black-legged
kittiwake.
I don't know. Is it some sort of animal or?
It's a bird.
Bird. Okay. Yeah, there we go. All right.
So there's an article in TechCrunch about Spoor, who are a Dutch business, I think, who are using AI to save birds from wind turbines.
Wow.
Okay. Now, wind is the largest source of renewable energy in the US, according to the US Energy Information Administration. Fantastic. We know that we need green tech. But the problem is that they are wreaking havoc with bird populations, which, frankly, just fly into them.
That's, yeah. I mean, I can imagine. I can imagine that's quite a annoying thing. Not just for the birds.
More than annoying. Yeah. Lethal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the fact that they have, does it work as like a shield or some sort of barrier, or?
So what it basically does, I mean, is bird migration patterns. They'll fly into wind farms when the turbines are going.
Yeah.
And
we
don't need to see any more. What Spoor does is it looks at bird migration patterns and behaviors, and it basically suggests when turbines should be
switched on and off.
When they know that birds are likely to be passing through an area.
Okay, very good. I mean, we were just having this conversation early on, weren't we? I was just stuck in a bit of school traffic in the morning, so I wish I had something to be like, right, leave now. You have a 5-minute window before the traffic starts to build up again, and you know, kind of go. So I think that's good, right? And it also will help to, I guess, yeah, you know, keep the cost of running these wind farms down, because if you don't have to have them on all the time and so on and so forth, but also
Well, I imagine it's very messy as well. If it's
the cleanup exercise, I imagine is quite extensive, and
it can't be good for the equipment.
No, exactly that, and also the maintenance and things like that, right?
Exactly.
So, I think having stuff like that. I mean, they look so stunning. You know, when you drive past like a wind farm on like a motorway and stuff like that, and you can just see them. And I think
I think they're quite attractive. You know,
do you? They are,
think
aren't
they're
they?
An eyesore, but I think.
Mate, I'm always that guy. If I can see him coming up, I will go into the slow lane and kind of slow down a little bit and just be like driving by. Even though there's not much to see, really, but it's just the way they're like they go. I don't know. I mean,
there's areas of France where they just go on and on and on, and it kind of looks epic.
Yeah. Oh, mate, it looks like something out of a movie. But I really like them, really. But also, you know, the kind of product that they have to. You know, to navigate around birds and nature. Yeah, it's brilliant. And I think technology can be used in so many ways. That's crazy. Well,
just to your point about traffic patterns, I mean, we know that Waze and Google Maps will suggest routes based on traffic. Yeah. I'm sure that they probably suggest routes based on regular buildup of traffic in certain areas, if they don't already.
Yeah, I think so.
If they don't already, that's going to be coming, right? Yeah. Although whether or not it's localised to your school and people dropping off kids in massive tanks of SUVs that take up half the road, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. But yeah, hopefully we'll see. If they're listening, then send an update.
Maybe we should just get in touch with them. Come on, Akish needs this so he can get back to his desk earlier.
Please.
Anyway, look, it's Friday. We hope you have a lovely weekend. Mary, thank you for being our guest, and we will be back on Monday. Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.